Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Celebrate our God-given freedom and faith while honoring our Blessed Mother with Ghirelli's USA Rosary. Each state is represented on this rosary's 50 beads. Red, white, and blue enamel adorn its patriotic crucifix. Get yours today. Shop www.ghirelli.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
We continue our discussion of Moses and the Egyptians right now on Catholic Answers Focus. Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this week, continuing a conversation we began last week, is Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and also the podcaster behind Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Jimmy, when you were here last, we talked a bit about the Egyptians. We mentioned the Israelites and Moses a little bit.
That was a lot of fun talking about Egypt, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is an avocation.
Yeah, I've taken courses in Egyptology and read a lot about Egypt and stuff. I've also, you mentioned Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. I've podcasted about it a number of times. Have an episode on the pyramids. Also have one on Akhenaten, the so-called heretic pharaoh,
right,
who was a monotheist.
Yeah.
And
not a very popular one.
Not after a while. Yeah. But he, as some people have even suggested, he may have influenced Moses. Also, recently did an episode of Mysterious World on the theory that some archaeologists have that King Tut was murdered.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So I cover this a lot there, too. But check out the previous, if you haven't heard it, check out our previous focus on Egypt. It's a lot of fun.
Funky Tut. That's what I call him. King Tut. Funky Tut.
Born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia. Neither of which is true.
No, I never went to Babylonia.
He was actually, we know where he was born.
Well, where was he born?
He was born at a site that's today it's called Amarna. At the time, it was called Akhet Aten, which means the horizon of the Aten. The Aten was the god of the solar disk that his father, Akhenaten, worshipped as the only true god.
Okay, so let's start with Moses then. You and I are speaking about Moses as if he's a real guy, a historical figure.
Uh-huh.
What about the objection from the historian who might say, look, let's be a little skeptical here. Moses is maybe an amalgam of figures, or probably he's legendary. He's the legendary kind of projection into the past of later Hebrew people.
Okay. I would say a couple things. The first one is there's a criterion that it's most often applied in New Testament studies, but it's what's known by scholars as the criterion of embarrassment. And the idea is you're not going to make up something that's embarrassing. So if something would be embarrassing to your position, and you're admitting it, it's true. It's reliable.
I gotcha. Yeah.
And it's not something that you're going to make up.
What's embarrassing about Moses?
Well, there. Before we get to Moses, let's do the Exodus.
Okay.
Because one of the things that, one of the foundational claims about Israel is, okay, we used to be slaves in Egypt, and then we got out of Egypt, and we came here to the Holy Land.
Yeah.
Is being a slave a good thing in the ancient world?
No.
No, it's not. It's embarrassing.
Right.
And Egypt was a bigger, more militarily powerful entity. It was a superpower in the ancient world. And it wasn't the only one. The Hittites were another one. They lived in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And the Egyptians and the Hittites would then fight each other, but because the Egyptians were terrible sailors, they didn't do naval battles. Mm-hmm. Instead, they went around into the Holy Land and fought in the Holy Land with the Hittites. Mm. And that's why Megiddo, the site of the Battle of Armageddon, is such a famous military. There have been innumerable battles at Megiddo because it's at this military crossroads. And so Israel is this little vulnerable state.
Right, between the two
superpowers.
Right.
And they're not the only ones. You also have the Assyrians and the Babylonians on the other side.
Right.
So you have this vulnerable little state, and they're saying, yeah, okay, we used to be slaves over of this other superpower.
If you were making it up, you wouldn't make that.
No. If you look at other cultures, and it's like a look at the Babylonians. Okay, where did people come from? Well, we got made right here in the land between the rivers by the gods when Apsu and Tiamat died. In Egypt, let's look at Egypt. Where did people come from? They were made by the Ogdoad group of deities right here in Egypt.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we've always been here. The gods made us here.
Yeah.
So if you have a group of people saying, actually, we weren't made here. We were
imported.
We escaped slaves. Okay.
Is that right?
That's the criterion of embarrassment. Okay, this is a real event. They're not making this up.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Slave revolts, slave escapes need leaders.
Yeah.
So somebody was appointed leader when they came out of Egypt.
Right.
And the Israelites give the name Moses to that person. So whether he was historically called Moses, you can say, well, somebody had to lead him out of there, and that's who they call that person Moses.
To.
Now, what about the fact he's called Moses, though? Is there anything there that might indicate that was his historical name and not just something they made up for him later? Yeah, there is.
Why?
You know what? Moses is an Egyptian name.
Oh, okay.
Moses is Egyptian for born or is born. And you hear it in the name. It's usually coupled with the name of a deity. So this is something scholars have long noted. These are called theophoric names, names that have the name of a god in them. And you see that in Israelite names all the time, like Daniel, Daniel.
Right.
El is God, so Daniel, God is my judge.
Right, Tutankhamun, who we were talking about before.
Right, exactly. Tutankhamun. Now, originally he was born Tutankhaten because his dad was an Atenist.
Oh, yeah.
But Tut in Egyptian means image.
Yeah.
Ankh, which is this, you know, the kind of cross looking symbol with the bulge on the top. Ankh means life. And Aten or Amun were both deities.
Yeah.
So he was born living image of Aten, but then he changed his name when he went back to the old religion. He changed his name to living image of Amun.
Yeah.
Well, you hear this Moses born all the time in Egyptian names. If the Exodus occurred at the traditional date in the 1400s BC, the Pharaoh at the time was named Tutmosis the third, which would mean Toth, the god of magic. Toth is born. On the other hand,
I thought David Copperfield was the god of magic.
No.
Oh, all right.
if the Exodus occurred at the date that's popular among most scholars today in the 1200s, then the Pharaoh at the time would have been Ramesses the second, Ra Moses.
Oh.
Ra is born, the god Ra. And so the fact that Moses has an Egyptian name that probably would have been paired with the name of an Egyptian god that then got circumcised off because they didn't want to say the name of the Egyptian god.
Oh, I see.
Now, that's not a certainty. We do have some records of some people who were just called Moses, although we don't know, was there a god also that was associated with their name and they just didn't use it all the time.
Right.
But it's quite likely that Moses, because he was raised in Pharaoh's court, he had a name like Tutmos or Ramesses or Amos or something like that.
Right.
And then he got known as to his own people as Moses.
Yeah.
And they preserved the memory of that name, even though it was Egyptian.
And now his
Again, that's not the kind of thing you're going to make up for your great national leader.
No. Yeah. He's named after. Yeah. He's got one of their names.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that probably included one of the names of their gods who we don't believe in.
Right.
Okay. So were the Hebrew people, the Israelites there who Moses led out of Egypt, were they, by that time, had they rejected all these other gods? Were they monotheists, or what do we know about that?
They were not monotheists universally, certainly, because they immediately, you know, while Moses is up on the mountain, they fall into polytheism.
Oh, right.
Should say they fall into idolatry. Aaron, Moses's brother, makes a golden calf because there used to be in Egypt, all the gods of Egypt have statues, idols in their temples, and they bring them out occasionally at festivals and stuff. And so they're used to having a god represented by an idol. So Moses makes a golden calf and says, behold your God. Aaron makes a golden calf. And when Moses comes down, he's really mad about it. Smashes the idol, grinds it up, and makes everybody drink the water so that they're going to poop out the idol. I mean, that's why he's doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And
gets the point across.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, later we have a reference to the fact that while they were wandering the desert for 40 years, they prostituted themselves to goat idols that they had brought from Egypt. And so, and Egyptians, you know, had animal-headed gods and stuff.
So they're following God, but they're still working on it.
Yeah. This position is sometimes called henotheism. Uh-huh. And the idea is, okay, they may believe in multiple gods, but there's like one who's our God. It's like he's the one we're really concerned about. He's the one we're worshiping. And so they had an awareness that Yahweh is our God. He's the one that's making a covenant with us. But they, at least as a body, had not yet all come to the understanding that there aren't any other gods.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, a situation that's kind of common. Some people presumably did have this, or, you know, like Moses, you know, could have had this pure monotheistic understanding at the time,
right?
But he's trying to get everybody else there, and they're not there yet.
It's like a pastor of any Catholic church, I'm sure. There's a great variety of beliefs, but that doesn't mean that that's the belief of that church.
Or, you know, any religious body you want to name, there are people who are, okay, we're part of the group, but we're not really that devout, you know.
Right, right. Okay, so I am, first of all, before we even go to the next question, can we talk more about Moses, like do some of these in the future?
Because
we're not even getting close to all the stuff I want to know about Moses.
Sure.
But so he's a historical figure, and he leads the slave Hebrew Israelite people out of the land of Egypt. Mm-hmm. I just want to get to this. There's been a movie recently that says that he wrote the Torah himself, and and this is somewhat controversial. I mean, I suppose the traditional,
I reviewed this movie.
Okay, the most traditional Christian belief is that Moses himself did write the five books of the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we fall on that now? What did Moses write? What do we know about
there's
that?
There's not a church teaching on this. Okay. This is a matter that the church leaves up to scholars to try to decide.
Okay.
And there is a diversity of opinion among scholars. Mm-hmm. For a long time, there was a view that, okay, it was all written by Moses. Then there was this view that, okay, no, it wasn't written by Moses. It's a composition of these four sources called J-E-D-P-E-N-P.
Yeah.
And now the J-E-D-P theory has broken down.
Yeah.
And scholars are kind of at sea, you know, how do we understand this? I would say, and this is just speaking for myself, I would say you look at the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. Moses is the main character in four of the five books.
Right.
He's not the main character in Genesis because he's not born yet. But after that, he's the main character. And I think that these were written, like Genesis was written about the time of King David. And there are various clues for that. So it's only 200 to 400 years after Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that lots of traditions in the Torah can have come directly from Moses and were passed down. I mean, they're legal institutions, religious institutions. Those last for a long time. And so, so it's easily possible for Moses to have been the lawgiver.
Were they illiterate people at this time? Like, would they? I mean, they must have, because the Ten Commandments are written down. So there must have been some.
Well, there's also a high role for oral tradition in this culture. But that's something we can maybe talk about in the future.
Yeah.
But you look at the Torah and it attributes individual things to Moses, like Moses said this or Moses did that.
Right.
But it doesn't say, I, Moses, wrote this.
Anywhere. I got you.
And you read the end of Deuteronomy, Moses dies and is buried, and it says, there is not risen another prophet like Moses in Israel to this day, suggesting this is looking back on Moses from a later perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's from about the perspective, maybe perhaps, of King David's reign or King Solomon's reign.
Interesting.
But it's not looking back that many centuries, just 2 to 4, and legal and religious institutions last a long time. So easily, this can be preserving lots of traditions that did go back to Moses.
Fair enough. Jimmy Akin, thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
Find out all. Well, I'll say it again. Here's what you should do. Go to the Google and search Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. You won't be sorry that you did. I don't probably need the article there in front of Google.
No. People know what you mean.
Yeah. All right. This is Catholic Answers Focus. Jimmy, we've also extracted a promise from Jimmy that he's going to talk more with us about Moses in the near future. Actually, you didn't say near, but I'm throwing that in there because it's been a lot of fun. Please, if you like Catholic Answers Focus, would you like us wherever you get this podcast? Maybe leave a nice comment and share it with friends. That way, Focus grows, and we'd really like it to grow. We'll see you next time, God willing, on Catholic Answers Focus.
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bach with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.